man today was a different sort of man, and yet he was like a lot of us. He was a guy that entered this world holding on to the heel of his brother. He was a twin. And when he came out of his mother's womb, he was grasping on to the heel of his brother, who was born just a couple seconds, a couple minutes before him. And so they named him Jacob, which means one who grasps the heel. It can also mean deceiver. And I don't know about you, but I would not like to grow up with a name that meant deceiver. Anybody here want to sign up? You know? And Jacob had a way about him. And, you know, he had this twin brother by the name of Esau. And Jacob and Esau, there's probably, growing up, they probably tussled, they probably wrestled, they probably had fun together. But Jacob was kind of scheming. And he was looking for ways to get ahead. And so in that time, in that culture, and we're in the book of Genesis today, if you want to kind of follow along, we're in Genesis chapter 32 and 33 and some other places too. It's a longer story. But Jacob was a little bit of a schemer. And so he was looking for a way to get his father's birthright. And the birthright always would go to the firstborn son, which, you know, he was not. He was not the firstborn son by a couple of minutes. And so one day his brother Esau came and he was famished. He was just completely hungry. He'd been out hunting. And Jacob said, and he said, you know, give me something to eat. And Jacob said, well, if you sell me your birthright, I'll give you something to eat. And Esau said, well, I'm about to die. I'm so hungry. So yeah, go ahead, have it, and give me that soup. So Jacob took Esau's birthright. Later on, you know, probably a couple of years later, Isaac, their father, was getting older. And it wasn't going to be too long before he died. And so he called his oldest son, Esau, to him, and he said, you know, go prepare a meal for me and bring it to me, and I am going to give you my blessing. I'm going to give you my blessing before I die. Well, Rebecca, who was Isaac's wife, Jacob and Esau's mother, she overheard the conversation, and she pulled Jacob to her side. Jacob was, for all practical purposes, her favorite son. And she said, you know what? Your father just told Esau to go out and get some wild game and prepare it, and he's going to give him his blessing before he dies. Here, I'm going to fix some food. I know how your dad likes things. And I want you to take this animal hide, and I want you to attach it to yourself because Esau's really hairy and you're not. And I want you to go in and take this food that I've prepared to your father, and I want you to pretend to be Esau, and I want you to get the blessing. And Jacob was a little bit dubious. You know, he said, Dad's going to figure this out. He's going to know that I'm tricking him. And he's going to curse me rather than blessing me. But Rebecca said, you know, trust me, got it together, just do what I say. And so he did it. Well, he's stolen Esau's birthright, and now he steals Esau's blessing. And, you know, a blessing is one of those things that, and it's not something that we can really easily understand, but it was so important in that time. So important. And Esau, so Jacob gets the blessing, goes out, leaves his dad, and then Esau comes in. And you might be wondering, you know, how were they able to pull this out? Well, Isaac's eyes were failing him. He wasn't able to see very well. He's pretty much blind. So he's just, you know, feeling and going by the sound of voices and things like that. And Esau comes in and says, here, you know, here's the food. I've prepared it, Father. Now give me my blessing. And Isaac begins to shake violently. He says, well, who was just in here? And Esau realizes what's happened. He's like, bless me, Father. He's just distraught. Bless me. Bless me. Well, some time goes on, and, you know, it's probably pretty icy waters between these two brothers. And Rebecca, she's listening to things. She's like a mother does. She just kind of has a sense of what's going on in between her sons. And she knows that Esau's not happy. And he's going to, when Isaac dies, he's going to go after Jacob, and he's going to kill him. So she goes to her husband, and she says, you know what? I think we need to send Jacob away. He needs to go back to my family in Paddan Aram, and he needs to find a wife from there, because these wives that Esau has married, they're driving me nuts. I can't stand them. You know, he needs to find a different kind of woman. He needs to find a woman from my family, you know, one of my brother's daughters. That's who he needs to marry. So Isaac calls Jacob to him, and he says, go back to your mother's family and find a wife. So Jacob goes. He's basically fleeing from Esau and from Esau's wrath. Esau's going to come for him. And he goes. Well, many, many years pass. Make a long story short, Jacob marries two of his uncle's daughters. That in itself is a big, long story. He ends up with four wives, basically, and 11 children at this point. He has 11 sons and one daughter at this point. And he's worked for his uncle Laban, his sister's, or his mother's brother, for lots of years. And, you know, Jacob was a deceiver, but Laban, his uncle, was also a deceiver. And Laban had cheated Jacob and changed the terms under which Jacob was working for him numerous times. And, you know, Jacob's probably just holding on. And he's building up his flocks. He's building up his wealth. You know, he has all these children. He has these wives. God has blessed him in amazing ways. You know, it's a different culture. They practice polygamy then. We don't do that, but it's different. And God has blessed him in many, many different ways. And God comes to him and says, you know what? It's time. It's time for you to go back to your father's house. It's time for you to go back to the land that I've told your family to go to and that I've told your family to inhabit. It's time for you to leave Laban and go back. But Jacob is afraid because he knows his uncle and he knows how scheming his uncle is, probably because he's kind of like him. You know, he knows his games. And so he decides, you know what, we're going to have to just leave. We're not going to be able to say goodbye. We're just going to have to get out of here. And so he calls his wives to him, his two wives, and they are in agreement. They said, you know what, our father has spent all of our dowry, you know, all of the social security that was, you know, that you gave him in case something happened to you and he had to take us back and take care of us and provide for us. He spent all that. You know, they're disgusted with their dad and they're ready to leave. So Jacob packs up his family, he packs up his herds, and he leaves. They just go, just disappear. And about a week later, Laban figures it out or finds it out. And it says that he takes his relatives and he travels after Jacob. Finally finds them, and you know, Laban's angry, but they make a truce and they agree to part ways. And it's just after this point, when Jacob has just, you know, finally said goodbye to Laban. They've parted ways on, you know, patched up peaceful terms. They're not going to go to war with each other. Laban's not going to take back his daughter and his grandchildren, even though he says, you know, they're my children. they finally patch things up, and they've gone their separate ways. And it's just after this, and they're traveling. And Jacob comes into a camp. And it's one of those things that as we're reading scripture, we don't necessarily understand. But he's greeted by angels. And he says, this is none other than the camp of God. And he sets up camp for the night. Now Jacob, you know, he's just gotten through that big thing with his father-in-law. And he's getting close to the land of his brother. And he sent messengers ahead to his brother, Esau, you know, saying, Jacob is coming and trying to kind of patch things up, prepare the way, because last time he saw his brother wanted to kill him. And Jacob is there in the camp, and his stomach is in knots. He is a mess. Just thinking about what could happen. And he prays to God. I'm going to read his prayer. And it says this. It says this in verse 9 of chapter 32 of Genesis. Then Jacob prayed, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan River, but now I have become two camps. Because he was so afraid of Esau coming and attacking him that he took, you know, half of his wives and half of his children and put them in one camp and the other half over here. You know, so if one camp was attacked, maybe the other would be saved. Save me, he says, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. If that sounds familiar at all, God made a similar promise to Abraham. You know, that your descendants will be like the sand of the sea. And here Jacob is, and he has his descendants with him. He's got his children with him. And he's looking at the possibility that, for all he knows, Esau is still ready to kill him. And probably not just kill him, but kill everything and everyone that belongs to him. And he calls to God and he says, you know what? Remember the promise that you made to Abraham, but, you know, God made a promise to him too. And when Jacob was on his way, running away from Esau the first time, God had met with him at a place where he stopped. And God made a promise to him and said, you know what? I'm going to bring you back to this place, and your descendants will be like the sand on the seashore. God's saying, you know what, Jacob? Jacob is saying, you know what, God? I remember that promise that you made to me when I was headed the other direction. I remember. And yet here I am in this place, in this camp. And I'm concerned that my children are going to be wiped out. And yet you've said that your descendants will be like the sand on the seashore. Well, he's in that camp, and he has a busy night. That's all I have to say. He gathers up animals, lots and lots of animals, and sends them ahead to his brother Esau. He's, you know, trying to make a peace offering with them, trying to set things up so things go well. He takes his wives and his children, and he sends them across the river Jabbok during the night. And then he sends all his belongings across And then finally, he's the only one left in the camp. And it says that a man comes and wrestles with him all night long. There is Jacob. You know, after he's done all of this work, after he sent these flocks ahead, after he sent his family ahead, gotten them across, there he is in the camp, wrestling with this man all night long. And, you know, just as dawn is breaking and the sky is starting to turn gray, you know, kind of that period when it's just still kind of night, but things are just kind of starting to shift. It says, the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, and this is in verse 26 of verse 30 of chapter 32. But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Remember, what does Jacob mean? Deceiver, grasper of the heel. Here he is, holding on to this man. You know, and what I didn't tell you right before this, what I didn't read, is as they're wrestling, you know, Jacob's not letting the guy go. The man touches Jacob's hip, and he wrenches it. And yet Jacob's still holding on to him. He's not letting him go. You know, and the guy's like, "Let me go." Can you just see like this, kind of like, I kind of almost picture like this older brother with this younger brother hanging on. You know, he's like, "Let me go." And it's like, "Not unless you bless me." And the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." God changes Jacob's name. It's no longer deceiver. It's no longer grasper of the heel. God says, "You know what? No, I see you differently. You're someone who's wrestled or struggled with God and with people, and yet you've overcome." And Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. You know, think about it. The other blessings that Jacob had received, he took. They weren't really his. He took them under false pretenses. When his father had blessed him, his father thought he was blessing Isaac. There was one time right before Isaac sent Jacob away where he did bless Jacob as Jacob. So he had that. But how significant is it here that Jacob is blessed as his own person, as his own self? "Why do you ask my name?" he said. Then he blessed him there. And then it says this in verse 30. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." Jacob asked the guy his name. And the guy basically said, "You know, why are you asking me my name? You know who I am. You know who you've been wrestling with all night long. You've been wrestling with God." And Jacob recognizes and says, "You know what? Because I saw God face to face and lived." Well, night is over. Esau's coming. And the story goes on. They make peace. Jacob heads with his animals and his family to Shechem, area near where he grew up. If you remember last week when we had the two mountains on either side and had the valley here, that was the valley of Shechem. You know, fast forward, you know, several hundred years. It's last week. We're going back in time today. Jacob settled in Shechem. And it says that he settled there and he built an altar. And he named it this. He named it El Eloah Israel, which means God is the God of Israel. In other words, God is my God. God is my God. And all throughout this season of Lent, these days leading up to Easter, we've been focusing on different altars throughout Scripture. And Jacob's altar reminds us that God invites us to surrender to him. And what did surrender look like for Jacob, this deceiver, this man who was grasping the heel, who, you know, who was always trying to grasp things, grasp people? Here he is. He's in a wrestling match with none other than God himself. His hip has been wrenched, and still he's hanging on. Guy says, you know, let me go. Jacob, not until you bless me. What does surrender look like for Jacob? God, I'm going to cling to you until you bless me. Not because I'm trying to control you, but because I recognize that you are greater than I am and that I need you. I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. I am going to hold on to you. I am going to cling to you. So here is my question for us this morning. What would it look like for you this morning? What would it look like for me, for each one of us sitting here? We can only ask the question for ourselves. What does it look like for us to surrender to God? What does it look like for you to cling to God right here, right now, in your specific situation? What does it look like for you to cling to God?